Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Melissa Merson, and thank you for joining our conference call today. Hopefully all of you have already seen our new SCHIP report that was posted on our website this morning. If not, it is up on the website. Peter's going to speak for a few minutes, and then we'll take your questions. If you have a question you'd like to ask, please press star A on your dial.
Sorry, it's star one.
Star one, I'm sorry. And then we'll know that you want to ask a question and you'll be recognized. And I believe star two if you want to withdraw your question or withdraw from the question queue. Your lines will be muted and your line will be opened when you're recognized to ask your questions. If any of you are operating under tight deadlines and are unable to wait through the call to ask your question, please email me separately and I'll do whatever I can to give you some priority attention if these are questions of general interest. Let me just add before we proceed that as this is our first attempt at this, we would gratefully appreciate any feedback from any of you on how the call works afterwards. And it is my expectation that we will have an audio file of this later on today available. If you need to follow up on anything, please get in touch with me later. And with that, I'd like to introduce our director, Peter Orszag.
Thanks a lot, Melissa. The report that we released today is about SCHIP, the State Children's Health Insurance Program, which was established by the Balanced Budget Act of 1997 to expand health insurance coverage to uninsured children and families with income that is low but just basically too high to qualify for Medicaid. Like Medicaid, SCHIP is financed jointly by the federal government and the states, and the federal matching rate for SCHIP is actually a little bit higher than under Medicaid, so the SCHIP match varies from 65% to 83%, whereas the match rate under Medicaid varies from 50 to 76%. Unlike Medicaid, though, which is an entitlement program, SCHIP is a grant program in which federal spending is capped in advance. Since the program's inception, Congress has provided nearly $40 billion for it. Approximately 6.7 million children were enrolled in SCHIP at some time during 2006, as were about 670,000 adults through waivers of various statutory provisions. Under current law, SCHIP is not authorized to continue beyond 2007, and that is why Congress is considering reauthorization of the program this year. And in that context, we thought it would be useful to provide a background paper on the operation of the program, which is what we released this morning. There are four main points in the paper. The first is that SCHIP programs vary widely across states. For example, the most common income eligibility threshold for the program, which is adopted in 26 states, is 200% of the poverty level. But 15 states set the limit above 200%, and 9 states set it below 200%. For example, North Dakota is at 140% of the federal poverty threshold, and New Jersey is at 350%. The programs vary across different dimensions also. For example, states have the option of using the SCHIP program to either expand their existing Medicaid program to create a separate program or to implement some combination of the two approaches. The most common approach, which is adopted in 21 states, is to combine some expansion of Medicaid and a separate program. 11 states have used just an expansion under Medicaid, and 18 states have just created a separate program under SCHIP. The second point of the report is that SCHIP has significantly reduced the number of uninsured children in the United States. Figure one in the report, which shows the trends in uninsurance rates by income for children in different families with different family income, shows that there was a marked decline in uninsurance rates between 100 and 200% of the poverty level, which was the group that had the greatest increase in eligibility from the creation of SCHIP. In particular, according to CBO's analysis, the percentage of children in that income group who were uninsured fell from 22.5% in 1996, which was the year before SCHIP was created, to 16.9% in 2005, which is a reduction of roughly 25%. By contrast, the uninsurance rate, as is evident in that figure, was relatively stable among children in higher income families, for example, families with income over 200% of the poverty level. And interestingly, if you look at the line for those children and families below the poverty threshold, there was some decline, some decline there from 26.7% in 1998 to 22.0% in 2005. Most analysts believe that that decline occurred because of outreach efforts that were associated with SCHIP, outreach efforts and other programmatic changes associated with SCHIP, so that even though there were no direct policy changes made to Medicaid that could explain that kind of reduction in uninsurance rates among children below the poverty threshold, the creation of SCHIP likely did increase take-up for the Medicaid program because of spillover effects from SCHIP activities. The third point of the paper is that although SCHIP has significantly reduced the number of uninsured children in low-income families, the net effect is smaller than the number of children who have been enrolled. In other words, the effect of uninsurance is not one for one. And that is because part of the increase in public coverage that results from the program has been offset by a reduction in private insurance coverage. The reason for that is that SCHIP provides an alternative source of coverage that's less expensive and often provides a broader range of benefits than private insurance. And as a result, some parents who otherwise would have enrolled their children in private coverage may prefer instead to switch their coverage to SCHIP. Estimates of this effect vary depending on the precise measures used and the particular estimation procedure adopted. But on the basis of a review of the research literature, CBO concludes that the most reliable estimates currently available suggest that a reduction in private coverage among children is between a quarter and a half of the increase in public coverage associated with SCHIP. In other words, for every 100 children covered under public programs as a result of SCHIP, there is a corresponding reduction in private insurance coverage of between 25 and 50 children. So in other words, for every 100 children covered because of SCHIP, the net effect on uninsurance is somewhere between uninsured kids is somewhere between 50 and 75. It's important in evaluating those figures to realize that pretty much any attempt to reduce the number of uninsured in the United States or uninsured children in the United States in particular will have some of this crowd out or buying out the base kind of effect. The uninsured population is not a static concept. It is dynamic and evolving over time. The uninsured children exist in many of the same pools or communities as insured children, and so any attempt to target uninsured children necessarily has some spillover effects, and thus this kind of effect on private coverage needs to be put in the context of other alternatives to increase coverage through public programs or other programs. In terms of changes to the program, they would likely have different effects on private coverage. For example, automatically enrolling children who are currently eligible but unenrolled would likely generate less of an offset in private coverage than expanding eligibility in the program to higher income thresholds. And that's simply because as you move up the income distribution, families tend to have more private coverage, and so there's more opportunity for this kind of substitution to occur. And that brings me to the final point of the paper, or the final part of the paper, which is that there are various options for changing the program that are under discussion. The paper discusses several of them, including intensifying efforts to enroll uninsured children who are eligible for SCHIP. Estimates suggest that there are roughly 2 million children who are eligible for SCHIP but are not enrolled in the program. Redefining the target population, for example, by changing the income thresholds for determining eligibility. Changing the formula that determines the distribution of federal SCHIP funds across states. Modifying the rules for the redistribution of unspent funds in each state. Changing the matching rate for SCHIP. And modifying the benefits that states are required to provide. For example, proposals to require that states provide services covered under Medicaid's early and periodic screening, diagnosis, and treatment program. So that's a brief summary of the paper, and I think with that we will open it up and turn to your questions. Okay. And I'm told that... Okay. And I guess the Los Angeles Times will go first.
Okay. Thank you for taking my question. And basically, I got it's like a two-part question, and the first part has to do with that crowd-out effect that you were talking about. Okay. And does that change over time? Like when you looked at this, or when CBO looked at it at the inception of the program, was it estimated to be, you know, within that same range of 25 to 50 out of 100 kids?
When CBO was doing estimates of the creation of the program, the figure that was used at the time was 40%. So that is within this range.
Okay, I'm just thinking, you know, because health insurance is getting more expensive, could the crowd-out effect get more pronounced?
It's obviously the evolution of this, of crowd-out or of the reduction in private coverage associated with the increase in public coverage could change over time. It could change over time in response to a given set of policies, and it could change over time because the policies themselves change. It's likely that the impact from, again, different directions for reauthorization could result in significantly different numbers. For example, automatically covering or trying to expand coverage for children who are currently covered under the, or eligible, I should say, for the Medicaid program would likely generate lower crowd-out effects or less less of a reduction in private coverage than, I don't know, for example, expanding the income threshold for SCHIP. So there's variation. There's, you know, this concept can evolve both over time and is applicable in different ways to different policy changes.
Okay, and I just wanted to make sure I understood what you said earlier, and you just kind of repeated it now, but just to make sure, because this stuff is kind of complicated.
Yes, it is.
You were saying before that, you know, basically, as far as this offset, as far as this crowd out effect, the make sure I understand this right. That generally speaking, auto enrolling or I guess enrolling more kids who meet the current eligibility criteria for either of these programs, Medicaid or SCHIP, would have less of this crowd out effect than raising that income threshold higher. Did I get that right?
That's correct. And just to, again, underscore the logic, because I know this is all complicated, which, by the way, is the reason that we're holding this call, because we know that topics like these are complicated and wanted to make sure that you all had an opportunity to ask questions like this. One dimension along which this phenomenon will vary is the income of the families covered under the public program. And in particular, as you move further and further up the income distribution, there is more and more opportunity for the increase in public coverage to be associated with a decline in private coverage, simply because more families at higher income levels have access to private coverage in the first place.
Thank you.
And so automatically enrolling or expanding enrollment among kids eligible for Medicaid, which is at the lower end of the income distribution, will have a smaller effect than expanding the income thresholds for eligibility to SCHIP for that reason.
So what you're saying is that the administration is making a good argument here.
No, we're not making a normative statement about the administration's proposal.
Mm-hmm.
I think, again, I do need to come back to the following point, which is even though there is some of this offset in terms of private coverage, you need to remember it's nowhere close to 100%. That is, the proposals do succeed in reducing the number of uninsured children, and that is why we found such a significant effect on rates of uninsurance among the income group covered by or most eligible for SCHIP. And it's particularly important to look at this phenomenon in the context of other alternatives to reduce uninsurance. So if policymakers want to reduce the number of uninsured kids by X million, what sort of approach is the most efficient or the most targeted? There is research, for example, from Jonathan Gruber at MIT suggesting that the expansion of public insurance programs like Medicaid and SCHIP, while it does generate some offset in terms of private coverage, is much better targeted in terms of avoiding buying out the base or avoiding this kind of substitution than alternative policies that involve tax credits or other approaches to trying to reduce the ranks of the uninsured.
Thank you.
Next up is Julie Robner. And you have to press star 1, I guess.
My question, I actually have two questions. One is sort of a follow-up to that question. How do you know for sure that this is really crowd-out? Because what we saw during the late 90s and the early part of this decade is a trend towards employers dropping coverage anyway, not just for kids. And what we kept hearing from the census officials is that these programs were picking up what employers were dropping. So how do you know that it was that this was the reason?
Right, and that's why you can't just look at figure one in our paper, which I think is so striking, and conclude that we know from that that SCHIP resulted in this reduction in insurance. The studies that have been done try to control for trends in employer coverage, for example, by looking at families right above the income thresholds relative to right below them.
Mm-hmm.
And examining what happens as a result of being, this is obviously a sort of gross approximation for what they're doing, but looking right above the income threshold and right below the income threshold and looking at the differential results that arise from being just slightly above or slightly below.
So you can see whether if they're eligible for SCHIP, that they're not, that they are transferring to SCHIP.
So, for example, in particular, there's some increase in SCHIP coverage, but what is happening to private coverage among those who are eligible relative to those who are slightly higher income and therefore not eligible? Because the argument would be that but for this program, you would expect someone with $1,000 more in income than the threshold to be experiencing roughly the same sorts of trends as someone $1,000 below.
And I have another question about another possibility that Congress is talking about, which is this whole idea of adults on SCHIP. I keep seeing this number about the four states that allow adults that are neither parents nor pregnant women on SCHIP. Do you have any idea who those are? Are these kids who've aged out? Are these developmentally disabled adults? Do we have any, or are these just sort of random adults?
I think, Lyle, are you on the phone? We can get back to you with any information that we have on that.
Okay, because I've just been wondering this all year.
Okay.
Thank you.
No problem. Is there, what's the next? All right, well, I guess we will be very efficient unless anyone has any additional questions. I'll give you another second. Okay, Associated Press is next. And again, you need to press star 1 if you would like to ask a question.
States are taking, do states take various steps, though, to reduce the crowd-out effect? For example, are there waiting periods for 3 months or 6 months or even up to a year to reduce this crowd-out effect? And does your analysis assume none of this sort of action where you have a waiting period?
So first part of the answer is that, yes, most states actually have taken various steps to mitigate the effect of the public programs on displacing employer-sponsored insurance. For example, as you mentioned, a common approach is to impose a waiting period, some specified length of time, that children must be uninsured before becoming eligible for SCHIP. So, for example, in 2006, 35 states had a waiting period, with 16 having a six-month waiting period and 11 having a three-month waiting period, and then other states having the other part of the 35 having varying different lengths. The studies that have been done basically reflect those various provisions, and that may be one reason why the estimates are in a lower range than some potential for reduction in private coverage. So, for example, according to one study, 60% of the children who became eligible for SCHIP as a result of the program had private coverage in the year before the program was established. You don't get numbers that are that high in the actual studies that have been done in terms of what has actually happened, in part perhaps because of the various steps that states have taken to mitigate this effect.
Thank you. I guess in in summary, Congress could take steps that could drastically mitigate this 25 to 50% crowd out figure.
I would, again, two things are worth noting. The first is that there's often tension between that objective and succeeding in covering the uninsured. So, for example, the longer the waiting period and the more hoops one needs to jump through to become eligible, the more you might reduce that figure, but on the other hand, the less successful you may be in actually reducing the ranks of the uninsured, which brings me back to that other point that I was trying to make, which is that the uninsured are swimming around in the same pool as the insured, and it is very hard to sort of reach a little net into that pool and just pick out the uninsured. You're almost inevitably going to be picking up part of each, and it is the more you try to be very, very, very targeted, the less successful you may be in an aggregate sense in reducing the ranks of the uninsured overall. This is another way of putting it. This is a necessary trade-off that's involved in any significant effort to reduce the ranks of the uninsured.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else? Any more questions? Okay, well, if not, we appreciate your joining the call. Thank you very much, and feel free to get in touch with Melissa if you have any further questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes our call.